2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Today on First Lady and Friends, I had a great friend, Mike Moon. He's the associate director at USERV Utah. We had a great conversation about volunteerism, about how important it is, how organizations do things differently, how important it is to train, all the things that we got into today. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We are here, new episode, talking to a good friend of mine, Mike Moon, Associate Director at USERV Utah. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, First Lady Cox. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited you're here, Mike. We've gotten to know each other the last little while, few years, just through the First Lady Initiative, through Show Up. All of a sudden, I forgot its name. No, I'm just kidding. but yeah, you've been instrumental, and USERV's been instrumental in the stuff we've been doing around service. And so we want to talk about that. But before we do that, we want to get into just you. Let's talk about who you are. Where did you grow up? What did you, where? Tell me a little bit about your family and your background.
Sounds great. Happy to share. I grew up in a modest home in Kearns, Utah. Family of five children. I'm the oldest of five. And I went to school at Backus Elementary, Jefferson Junior High, Kearns High School. I studied at Southern Utah University with both my undergraduate work as well as my graduate work, and have lived in Utah all of my life and love it.
I love that. That's so fun. So you're the oldest. Are you like the type A personality, the red personality?
I am very much the type A personality, right? The person on vacations that says, okay, what's next? And this is the itinerary planned, yeah. And this is the backup.
Yeah. Does it drive your family crazy, or are they like thrilled with that?
I think they're thrilled with it because none of them have that quality, right? Yeah. They're glad someone else can take it on. So,
yeah, there's this like TikTok video or reel that I saw and that I send to everyone, because now that we travel and it's, we have people with us that travel with us. I mean, Spencer's been like totally like you. He's like the OCD travel guy. He's like our – and then now it's just like – we kind of follow people where we go, and then we just kind of end up where we are. And it's like, there's this video and maybe you've seen it, where the little kid is just bebopping around, and then the parents like with all the stuff. And that's like what we feel like sometimes. We're just like, whatever, we're just here.
That's great. No, that's got to feel good too, to just follow people around, right? And not be in charge sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Can you do that? Is that like a thing you can do?
Or it's difficult. It like, but yeah, I have to really prepare my mind to say, this is going to be more loosey-goosey, right?
I have to
get in that mindset.
Get in the mindset.
Exactly.
Like, do you find like when you go, with Spencer, like too, because he's the oldest and he always, and I'm number 5 of 10, so it's just like, whatevs. Mm-hmm. But like he's better now, but like when we were first married, it was like, get back with his family, and like they'd all drive him crazy because he like had to have everybody, be worried about. And I'm like, honey, why are you worried? This is not your job to worry about this. And he was worrying about everything in the family. And I'm like, relax.
What people are thinking, if they're having a good time, right? Those are all worries that I carry on my shoulders too.
Okay. So it's an oldest child.
I relate for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. So tell me about your kid. You have kiddos and
got two children. Also got married here in Utah, met at Southern Utah University. We have one that just started junior high, so that's big for us, right? He's at Shoreline Junior High. We're in, like, your parents. We're in Davis County right now.
Yeah.
And so, and then we've got one in second grade, so they've got an age gap.
Okay. Oh, but, that's fun, though, because those are two very different stages.
Yeah, they are different stages, but it's nice that they're back and there's routine again in our family, right? And that feels good.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think there's a lot of us that kind of do this thing, you know, as parents, where it's like, yay, school's out because I'm tired of putting lunches together and I'm tired of, you know, all the things that it entails and the end of school stuff that's crazy and all the concerts and the this and the that. And then I don't know if you're like me, I get to summer and I'm like, okay, now I'm actually ready for some structure. Right. Get them out of here.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's been too loose for so long. Let's get back to structure. We feel the same way and feel the same things in our household. Yeah. Interesting story, though, about our oldest child. Part of me getting into the career that I'm in now was work in higher education in campuses. I worked at Southern Utah University. I followed my way up I-15, Utah Valley University, and then most recently Weber State University. And my role at those institutions was to help students recognize how to volunteer and serve in their communities. And during breaks from school, we would take groups of students to other communities. It's called alternative breaks, right? Mm-hmm. So during summer break, fall break, spring break, winter break, we would take groups of students to other communities to kind of ignite the fire for them in volunteerism. So I got to do 37 of those trips during my higher education career all over the world and learned so much about volunteerism, and it really kind of cemented what I'm doing. But for Cooper, when he was born, he's adopted, and we got to be in the room. It was this magical moment with the birth mom. But 4 hours after his birth, I had to jump on an airplane and travel with UVU students to Fiji for some community engagement work. So, yeah, I missed the first 2 weeks of his life.
Oh, no kidding.
And I've made up for it ever since.
Yeah. Wow. Especially new baby, getting him home and figuring everything out. Oh, that's,
It was wild.
Yeah. How did your wife do with that?
Right. Well, she loved it because she got the opportunity to really bond with him, right, without anyone else taking that time. So she really enjoyed it, but also, like, it was heart-wrenching too, right? Because it's an adoption, right? Like, we've been waiting for this for so long and we're excited, and so to miss that first couple of weeks was a difficult thing.
But it
helped knowing we were doing such great things in Fiji.
So it sounds like, I mean, when you were at school, when you were in Cedar at SUU, is this something you always thought about doing? Where did you get this drive to, or who was your example? Like, where did you find the passion for volunteerism?
Yeah, like many of us, we have these mentors and these wise sages that come into our lives just at the right time. And for me, that person was Pam Brannon. She was my communications professor, and she was also the advisor for this service council, as it was called at SU at the time. And she said, "Hey, Mike, like, we had a service project as part of the course, right? It was built in and baked into the curriculum." And she said, "I've noticed some really great qualities. Like, why don't you consider applying for the service council?" And I thought, oh my gosh, why don't I, right? And so I applied, and the rest is history, in that the experience I had on the service council at Southern Utah University shaped my future career, my living, the lenses through which I see the world, our communities, our state. And so it was that one moment, right, that a professor, a teacher took to notice something in me and suggest something that really put my life on a trajectory that I otherwise probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, and SUU, you know, it's interesting. We've worked with on college campuses with their service organizations, and everybody kind of does it a little differently.
Yeah.
But I was blown away. We visited SUU's service office. I can't remember what it's called.
The Community Engagement Center.
There it is. Yep. There it is. And it was amazing. We were blown away by the programs that they were running. And this idea of taking kids and doing service on these off breaks or these downtimes that students have. I just was blown away. How did that start? And you came into it and it was going, but they've even grown since then.
Yeah. At the time that I came into the service council, we were only in our second year. I think the trip that I took was the second year that SUU was doing that. But alternative breaks was pretty new. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I know that you had a great time at SUU, and it's not, SUU is amazing, right? I'm a true T-bird, but it's not unique to SUU, right? Like all of our campuses have these incredible programs and opportunities for college students to get involved. But yeah, it started with a student initiative at SUU. And the role that I filled in the service council was to lead a group of 30 other SUU students to Guaymas, Mexico, and serve at an orphanage and at this after-school program and so many places that really opened up students' eyes to needs and that they could be like someone who helps fill those needs and then come home with that enthusiasm and passion and skills and put it to work locally in doing good work in their local communities.
Oh, I love that too, because, sometimes we forget the needs that are here because, you see things on the news and, sometimes we forget that, there are needs right here. So I love that idea of kind of seeing needs out there and bringing those ideas home. Have you kept in contact with a lot of people that you've served with and maybe tell me some of the other places that you were able to visit during that time?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I do stay in contact with them. In fact, I was recently asked to be part of the alumni board, the alumni council at SUU. So I'm so excited. Shout out to all my T-Birds out there to serve the school continuously in that role. But some of the other places we went, the program at Utah Valley University started on a trip to Fiji. We had a student from a Fijian island, Navualevu, the northern island, that said, hey, there are so many incredible needs in my community. I've learned how I can make a difference, right? I can identify needs and make a difference in my classes here at UVU, and I'd like to do that for my hometown. Like, what can we organize, right? And so I talked to our director, and we were able to put together a trip where roughly 40 UVU students went back to this student's hometown to serve. Other places, we've been all over Central and South America. We've been all over Africa, the African continent. We did, right, some Polynesian islands, all over the United States and Utah, some really, like, cool local projects as well during breaks. And yeah, it was a really fun movement to be a part of.
I love it. I just think it's such a powerful thing. And I love the fact that it was connected, especially, that Fiji trip that connected to somebody seeing that they could locally help. I think sometimes we get a little caught up in, we want to go there and bring something really quick and then get out. But I love the actual connection that student had.
Exactly. Yeah. Every single day we had a reflection moment, as we called it, right? Where we would kind of unpack the experiences that happened during the day, how people were feeling and all of that. And most importantly, like you just said, how can we bring that back home, right? Like, I know you and Governor Cox right now are championing this Disagree Better initiative, right? And that's something that I have seen in all of my volunteer work, that service and volunteerism plays such a unique role in helping people disagree better, right? And connect on levels that other activities don't allow them the opportunity to.
Yeah, I love that. I want to get into, more of what you serve and the things you're doing now, and we'll do that when we come right back.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We're here with Mike Moon on First Lady and Friends. He's the Associate Director of YouServe Utah. Okay, so you were at SUU, you were at UVU, you've been at Weber State. Where did you make the leap into sort of the nonprofit world from the higher ed world?
Yeah, I'm really excited to, I was able to see the work on the campus level, right? All of these trips were amazing, but also it took me away from my family quite a bit, right? And so I thought, gosh, it would be really nice to see things at the statewide perspective, right? And I had collaborated a lot with the state agency, USERV Utah, and former director, LaDon Stoddard, and I just reached out and said, hey, right? Like, do you have any upcoming opportunities? I'd love that opportunity. And fortunately, there was. And yeah, it's been really, really interesting to see the work of service and volunteerism from the statewide perspective, right? And collaborate with all of the different institutions of higher ed, all of the nonprofits, public entities, and the volunteers they use. It's been a really interesting journey. And to be able to overlay that with all of the experience that I had directly on the ground working with students in a volunteer role myself. So it's been really great.
So I don't know if everyone knows what I mean, and we've had LaDon on the program before, but it's been a while. Yeah. Talk about what USERV is, because I think there's so many. You know, we have JustServe, we have USERV Utah, we have a lot of these service organizations that people maybe have heard or have worked with, but you know, not always familiar about what each. You know, each entity or which each organization does specifically. So maybe let's go back and let's like review.
Yeah.
You know, the organization you serve and just talk a little bit about their programming and what they do.
I love it. I think you're exactly right. I think that sometimes our state agencies are difficult to understand and right. What service exactly are they providing to me? So perhaps I'll approach it this way and it will be the most digestible way to understand it. But USERV Utah is the state's central coordinating body for service and volunteerism. So when you go and volunteer at a nonprofit organization, USERV Utah has hopefully trained that organization how to effectively manage volunteers, how to make your experience as a volunteer at the agency as good as possible, right? So that you come back in the doors, you're retained as a volunteer. That's what we do. We provide support and training to the infrastructure of volunteering. In addition to that, if you've heard of AmeriCorps, AmeriCorps is a federal program where people can volunteer and then get a living stipend and then an education award at the end of their service. In federal regulation, a state agency like ours has to exist to be the conduit, the flow of those federal dollars for AmeriCorps. So we're a pass-through agency for all of those AmeriCorps members and dollars doing such amazing things, meeting critical needs in Utah's communities.
Yeah, and for those of you that, I mean, maybe a lot of you are familiar with AmeriCorps. I was a little bit familiar because being in the schools with PTA and, you know, just being in and around my kids' schools, it really was, you know, a part of our school. We were a Title I school in Fairview and our elementary school. And even in my religious community, they were getting volunteers from the religious community to come in and be AmeriCorps volunteers to help be tutors and reading specialists and people that are there to help and, you know, just be there and help kids and, you know, be an extra support in the classroom for teachers. So I love that part of AmeriCorps. I know they do lots of other things, but that's what I'm familiar with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's an incredible program. If any of you have young adults in your families or neighborhoods, right, friends, please encourage them to take a look at AmeriCorps. It can be a really great opportunity to have a gap year, right, or a break, and help you refocus your educational or professional pursuits in a way in which you're in service of the community.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because, I mean, you've talked about being on campus and young adults and that, and like, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but the connection now that we know between service and volunteerism and mental health and positive mental health. Maybe talk a little bit what you've seen in your work with as it relates to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Service and volunteerism can play such a critical role in our overall well-being as a person, right? Mental health, certainly the mind, your emotions. Actually, there are studies that indicate that your physical health, right? That you live longer regularly volunteering. And the reasons for that is I what I think and what I've seen, this is how I describe it, is that so much of our lives are a mirror in front of our faces, right? We're constantly looking at ourselves, how to improve ourselves, how to improve our situation, how to improve our families and address needs and fires that come up in our families. But that mirror is constantly in front of us, right? Like, what am I going to be? How am I portrayed to others, et cetera, et cetera. What service does is replaces that mirror with a window, mm-hmm. right? Where you're able to see needs larger than your own, issues larger than you. You're able to connect with other people and understand them and who they are, right? Like just like you and I are doing here, understanding each other and backgrounds and the conversations we're having offline, right? And that's what volunteerism does, where you're connected for a common purpose. And that becomes the way, what ties you together, right? And so some of the other disagreements and differences in opinion melt away in that moment.
Yeah, you know, that's totally been my experience. We've had just great experiences. You know, when you get frustrated with the political process, when you get frustrated with, you know, your neighbor or your friend that, you know, has a completely different political point of view or point of, you know, opinion on anything, it just seems like it's what you described is exactly my experience. Those differences do melt away. Those differences do become so small when you look at human to human interactions, when you look at lifting each other's communities. And I'm telling you, we have to have this. Our country is not going to survive if we are not building communities. And we build communities through volunteerism and serving each other. I mean, that's just how it works, right?
Absolutely. And I think, like, you've hit the nail on the head. Like, we talk about things that are wrong and we build out these ideas on how to improve them. And in my unbiased, of course, opinion is that volunteerism solves many of them, right? And so it's interesting because at USERV Utah, being the state central coordinating body for service and volunteerism, we're constantly doing assessment on the public mm-hmm. to understand, right, the temperature around yeah. volunteerism and how we can meet gaps, what those gaps are. The biggest gap that we're seeing right now is that people say they just don't have time to volunteer, mm-hmm. right? So what are ways, if we recognize that volunteerism is a method to address a lot of these issues that we're seeing in our society, what are ways that we can bake service and volunteerism into activities that already exist, mm-hmm. right? We're doing things as a family. Are there ways in which, as a family, we can volunteer? In the classroom, if you're a teacher out there listening, right? Are there ways as a teacher that you can bake volunteerism into your curriculum, into your mm-hmm. day-to-day? As you're a business owner and a business, a supervisor, are there ways that you can allow your employees time to use their skills, their business savvy, to benefit nonprofits addressing a critical issue, right? Like, how can we build service into what's already existing to reduce that, what we're hearing, that yeah. people don't have time to volunteer.
Yeah, and I guess that's exactly right. And I love your point about businesses. We've been talking to businesses a lot about volunteering and we talk to businesses that give certain amount of that's been a big thing lately, is that businesses give a certain amount of, you know, paid volunteer hours. You know, they're still, you know, their work hours, but they're volunteering. They're able to go volunteer. I'm, of course, always encouraging them to go in the classrooms because I think it just builds up the community and makes our teachers' burdens lighter.
Yeah.
But I love that idea that we can provide those opportunities. One other thing that we've seen, too, in Show Up is we hear a lot from people, and tell me if you hear the same thing, too, is we hear a lot of people that actually want to volunteer. You know, families and individuals and young people, like, we want to volunteer. We just don't know where or how. And I think that, you know, that disconnect is something we're trying to work on at Show Up. But are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I think that is a disconnect, right? But I think, too, we also have to, like, redefine the paradigm or the thought around volunteerism, mm-hmm. right? To us, we think service or volunteerism is like this event. Like, we're going to go on this Saturday with our friends or group. And
giant project.
A giant project, yeah, right? Yeah, and we're going to do 2 hours and then we're good, right? Like, we've helped and we're great. Whereas, like, volunteerism is so much more than that. Certainly, all of our nonprofits are asking for, like, recurring volunteers, right? Mm-hmm. People that will dedicate a certain amount of time each week. But volunteerism is so much more than that. It's a way of life, mm-hmm. like, right? It's lenses through which you see the world. It's helping your neighbor. It's helping, right? Like, it's doing so many other things that is outside of the traditional, I'm going to go during these hours and do a large project.
Right. I think also that kind of gets to other people, organizations that think they need to put on a big project. I mean, I've had people reach out just even recently and said, you know, we've got this group of, you know, however many people, it was like 700 in our company, and we're looking for a project.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, you know, I'm sitting here racking my brain. And first of all, sometimes those projects are, I wouldn't say they're not, sometimes they can be just to do a project, and you're not actually, like, finding the need first. It's like, we need a project. What should we do? And so, I don't know, in my experience, sometimes those projects aren't as effective as those day-to-day things. So if I had 700 volunteers, you know, what would I do with them? So I'll ask you, if you had 700 volunteers, right now, what would you do with them?
Right, there's not a job, right, to effectively give that number of volunteers a really good, high quality experience. So that's what we're trying to help companies and groups think about and reframe. I think for a lot of companies, the reason why they do that is because they want the volunteer opportunity for them to be like a team building exercise, mm-hmm. right, or to be something where they grow and bond and, like, oh my gosh, remember when we did that. To reframe to say much more effective and much more beneficial to the nonprofit community, and the needs that need to be addressed are just what you said, release time, paid time to go out and volunteer. And if you're looking for an opportunity where there's that camaraderie or team building, what are other ways that you can identify that through their service, right? Could everyone share photos from what they're doing and share in team meetings that you have? Could they participate or pair share in what they did, right? Like, could you build that community around a way of doing things that so much more benefits the sector, which is skills-based volunteering on their own time?
Yeah. No, and I love that. And not to say that big projects aren't worthwhile, because, I mean, I've done a whole bunch of them, and sometimes it's really great to have, you know, a whole group of people that just come in and get something done really quickly. We've done this where we've done, you know, packets, we've packed, you know, weekend bags. Those are always really great. And that's, you can knock that out with a whole bunch of people on a weekend and pack however many, and those, you know, so we've, not to say that those aren't powerful and needed. But yeah, just making it a way of life is really, critical and important. We have something coming up, Utah Philanthropy Day. And I want to talk about that, but I want to do that when we come right back. We're back here on First Lady and Friends. Welcome back. Mike Moon, the Associate Director of YouServe Utah. So happy to have you. It's just been a delight. Mike and I, like, we do all these events together. They're all joyful. So we just have this joyful world that we live in of service. And we were talking off Mike a little bit about, you know, the dopamine hit that we get from outrage and hate and the things people, I have to say, like, this may be a little, we'll bring this back in from our off mic conversation, but I truly believe that one of the most powerful needs that we have as human is belonging. We need love and belonging. And belonging is so powerful, I believe, that we'll either find it in love or we'll find it in hate. And I think we see the powerful belonging in really destructive groups on, you know, in social media, in, you know, talk radio or cable news, whatever, political tribes, all the things. You find that really powerful belonging that's a lot of times rooted in hate, because you haven't found it in love. So I think volunteerism and service is the antidote to all that, because it creates belonging in a really powerful way of love, connection, joy, and great dopamine hits. But if you can just get off that outrage dopamine and get on the service and volunteerism dopamine, I think we're all going to be in a better place.
I totally agree. I think that that's one thing that volunteerism does, right? I read once, it was in a book that I read that said everyone wears this invisible sign around their necks that says, I need to feel important, or I need to feel loved, right? And I think too, when we're so angry at one another, it, to my understanding, it's really rooted in people not feeling heard or not. Mm-hmm. So the more that we hear people, right, understand them, and you're exactly right, volunteerism allows us that space to understand and to come together for a common cause. We're feeling good and really understand one another, and it can help. It can go a long way to reducing hate in our communities.
Yep. I love that. Speaking of that, you have a really we here in Utah have a great opportunity, and we have just I don't think people realize this, because you know myself and you, we both grew up here in Utah, so it's just been in our DNA. It's been, you know, a part of our social fabric here in the state. Philanthropy is such a big deal. We didn't realize until, you know, we talked to people in different states all over and different leaders in different states who are just blown away by our philanthropic community here in Utah, because businesses come in and, you know, if you've grown from the ground up here, it's baked into your business plan. Philanthropy is just baked in. I think companies coming here are now realizing, because we've had some amazing companies that have relocated here or expanded here, and they're looking around and thinking, wow, that I want to be a part of that, and I see the value in it. And if they don't see the value in it, we'll show them the value in it. So we have just a really phenomenal philanthropic community here, and I want you to talk about Utah Philanthropy Day and what it is and why we should know about it.
I love it. Yes, I listened to your past episodes and really enjoyed the episode with Sharon Eubank talking about the philanthropy that she's involved with, right, and things like that. It was really inspiring. But yes, Utah Philanthropy Day is an event in Utah. It's longstanding, has been going on for many years, that recognizes both really amazing volunteers and really amazing philanthropists, because we know this work cannot be as effective without money, right? And without finances to do the work. In the past, we've been able to recognize some really amazing companies doing this work: Campbell Company, Comcast, doTERRA, some foundations like the Collart Foundation, the Community Foundation of Utah, Fight for the Fight, and so on. And this event is a really amazing way to be inspired to do more. When I attend every year, I am left in the audience thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so inspired. How can I do more? So there are several ways I think people can help. One is attending. It is a fundraiser for YouServe Utah, Utah Nonprofits Association, and the Utah Association for Philanthropic Giving, and Utah AFP, Association of Fundraising Professionals. Let me get that right. And people can attend. Tickets are open. It's utahphilanthropyday.org is the website. They can also give. Our companies and philanthropies, there are sponsorships available for the event. So talk to me or anyone else on the committee, but you can find information on that at utahphilanthropyday.org. And then you can also nominate volunteers. We are taking nominations right now for what is called the Heart and Hands Award. It's an award that recognizes individuals and groups of people for really outstanding volunteerism. And they're in this room with just incredible people, a fantastic lunch, and they just feel so honored to attend with the organization they serve. And it's just an inspiring, incredible event.
Yeah, I love it. And I think, you know, Spencer's been a part of it for many years too. He's attended, and it's just such a great event and really a celebration of that, you know, social fabric that we talk about here in Utah, a celebration of the people doing the work on the ground, the people that are using their businesses and their resources to fund a lot of the projects and the nonprofits throughout the state. I mean, Show Up wouldn't be able to do any of what we're doing without generous people that are donating to our organization. I mean, that's how we're able to do all the stuff we're doing. And the same thing for every nonprofit throughout the state. They have generous people that make this stuff happen. So it's really cool. Talk maybe a little bit too about some of the other things that you're doing as far as trainings that you're doing that are, you know, for those of you that are interested, you know, businesses and things like that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, fantastic. So, really quickly on Utah Philanthropy Day, something that I think is so important is that oftentimes, and it's critical to our conversations we have with one another, is that we're often so focused on us, right? Like our own opinion and things like that. I just mentioned that in the last segment. But we need to be focused on like the needs of other people. And for the nonprofits, we train them like, you need to be thoughtful about what is in it for the volunteer, right? Like, what are they getting out of it? What is the benefit to the volunteer? And often we're so focused on like, what do we need as an organization, right? But if we can be outward focused in our conversations, outward focused in our recognition, outward focused in what we're doing, we'll find that so much more, like it comes back to us in so many new and important ways. And I think that's one of the ways Utah philanthropy plays a role in Utah is recognizing and showing all of the amazing volunteers and philanthropists, thank you, right? Like, right? There is a benefit to you being part of our community. But also, yeah, we're doing some really amazing trainings at YouServe Utah. We have a brand new training coming up that is called Leading for Impact. It is a training that will be taught to with businesses in Utah, helping them hone their impact, their corporate social responsibility, right? What do they want their employees to do, feel, hone in on their philanthropic giving? It's going to be a really incredible training. We're piloting it in January with an invitee cohort, and then it will be offered annually after that. But it's going to be a really amazing training. Also, if you are a public entity or nonprofit, we do training called volunteer management training, which is a professional development training on how to most effectively use this incredible resource we have in Utah, which is volunteers. We are number one in the nation for volunteerism. How are we using that incredible resource to its maximum ability? So that's what that training's for. We also have another training as part of our training suite, which is called Volunteer Programming for Maximum Impact. So like dramatic.
It's very dramatic. So like Silicon Slopes kind of thing.
Right. And it helps organizations hone their systems and processes, procedures, policies to maximize use of volunteers.
That's amazing. And I think, you know, we came into the, you know, nonprofit space very naive and really unprepared. There's a lot that goes into it. I mean, I have people come like, oh, I'd love to do, you know, get involved in your organization. I'm like, okay, let's think, you know, so sometimes, you know, an organization doesn't know how to effectively use volunteers and we're one of them, you know, we're trying to figure that out. So I love that training. What other advice would you give people that are just new to this space and are trying to figure this out together?
Yeah. The trainings are fantastic. We encourage you to come chat with our team members. We'd be happy to help and talk to you. Utah Nonprofits Association has some really fantastic resources as well. But for the general public listening to this, First Lady Cox, in your last podcast, you and Governor Cox left the episode with this, I thought, which is just so inspiring, and I related with it so much, where you said youth right now are seeing parents disagree, right? And they're taking that temperature with them throughout their day and perhaps as they grow up and mature. And I think it's so important as well for families to be thinking about volunteerism, because in just the same way that they're looking perhaps at how we're disagreeing with one another, youth could be looking at how we're volunteering, how mm-hmm. we're contributing to the community. And research empirically shows that the earlier that someone volunteers, the much more likely they are to continue volunteering for the rest of their life. We want that, right? So families, be thoughtful about how can I engage? How can I connect with issues that are important to me and my family and volunteer as a family with your children?
That is really great advice and really powerful. And I do have to say, Spencer maybe alluded to this too a little bit, that volunteerism actually, you know, the mental health aspect of it is huge. And we all know that, you know, a lot of our youth and our adults, I mean, a lot of us are struggling with mental health issues. And some of the research is showing that actually volunteerism is equally effective as medication for anxiety and depression. That's one study out of UCLA. So as we see that and we think about that with our kids, including Spencer actually asked the researcher and author, what about if it's compulsory? Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, like, I'm a mom and I make, you know, if I make my kids come with me, because I've done it, yep. You know, and you have kids that are like, I don't want to, I've got homework, I don't want, you know, all the things, and I'm busy and I da da da. And, you know, they actually said it's actually the same. Yeah. So for the parents out there that are thinking, you know what, sometimes it's because I've done this, it's easier, you know, just like it's easier to wash the dishes than make them. It's also easier just to go volunteer and not have them come with you because, you know, it's just not worth the fight or it's not, you know, whatever. Knowing that, just know that, you know, there's a lot of times when my kids, I've made them come and universally they leave happier, healthier, having better connections. You know, I've talked about it before, but we do some stuff with refugees. We've done some, like, our family tradition is to do a Thanksgiving dinner with refugees. And my kids, it's become, you know, I don't think it was the first time I suggested it, but it's become their favorite thing of the year. They absolutely love it. We spend time, you know, the governor's office doing stuff, serving Thanksgiving dinner to our friends who are homeless. And I'm telling you, like, the kids come in there and they're nervous, and it's uncomfortable sometimes when you're interacting with populations and people and humans that are struggling and that, you know, maybe they have a very different story than you do. And it's kind of intimidating in a lot of ways. And like, am I doing good? Is this going to be awkward? And then all of a sudden when we get going and they have human-to-human connections and, you know, folks coming and telling their story about how they struggled to escape whatever country they were escaping from, you know, political strife or wars or whatever that looks like, all of a sudden those kids are feeling really good about their own lives, but also about how important it is, like you said, to allow somebody else to be seen. So I just love that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that as we have these initiatives that are having children separate themselves from social media, we need to fill their time with something. And there is not a better activity than filling that social media time with volunteerism, getting out into the community. You're exactly right. I do. For parents out there, there is the right way to do it, right? There's a difference between perceived need and real need, communicated yeah. need, right? And so sometimes it's easy to look at the populations you're describing and say, oh my goodness, if they only had this or that, yeah. and right, and go in and try and fill those needs. And it's super important to go through nonprofits and organizations that have vetted those needs and do it the right way in that way. But absolutely, it would be a great activity for families.
Yep, I love that. Well, Mike, it's just been absolutely wonderful to have you and to talk about this stuff. We're both passionate about this. And so please reach out and we'll give that information, how to make sure that we are getting those volunteers, getting the training, and also, you know, to nominate
those awards. So we'll give that information. So thank you, Mike, for being here.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
To find more information, you can go to userve.utah.gov. Also, if you want to nominate somebody for the Heart and Hand Award, go to utahphilanthropyday.org. Thanks for being a friend.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.